Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like. They find themselves bound by what is popular, or at least their sense of it. They can only act within a narrow set of ideas, and that range is called the Overton Window. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues around the country and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, in this country right now, around 20% of people, or 25% of people, require a government permission slip in order to ply their trade. And this becomes a special burden for people who want to work in another state. They have to go through bureaucratic hurdles, sometimes even get extra training in order to work in another state. But there are some places now that are doing universal license recognition where they will accept the people who already have a license issued by another state. And one of those states is West Virginia, who recently passed this legislation. And today I'm talking with Jessie Troyan, who has been arguing for this policy. She is the Director of Policy and Research at the Free Market Cardinal Institute in West Virginia. Jessie, welcome.
I'm glad to be here. It's really exciting to talk to all of your team and reach especially the listeners of the Overton Window podcast.
What do you like about universal licensing recognition?
Oh, what's not to love? So like you started out with in the introduction, today it's almost one in four workers require a government permission slip to be able to work. Quite literally, it is illegal for these people to ply their trade and be paid for it without this permission slip. And to put this in perspective, 75 years ago in the 1950s, it was only about 5% people. So one out of every 20. Today, it's almost one out of every four people. And so, number one, this creates all of these hurdles for people to go about the business of making an honest living. Hey, I have a useful skill. I can help people out with it, put bread on the table for myself and my family, but I have to jump through all of these government hurdles for it to be quote unquote street legal. And with universal licensing, the big thing that this changes up is your occupational license is not easily transferable, say, in the same way that your driver's license is. So let's say in some instance that I were moving from West Virginia to Michigan and joining the Mackinac team to help advance the great work in the state of Michigan, too. Well, okay, nobody's having a great day if you've got to go to the DMV and go through all of this paperwork, but it's still a pretty straightforward process. That is not necessarily going to be the same if I were a licensed professional and not just an economist. So if I were a licensed professional moving to Michigan, it's not necessarily so straightforward. I would have to possibly go through education again, more training, take another exam to prove to this body that I am a competent professional, despite the fact that West Virginia has said so for the duration of time that I've been here. But then Michigan is like, no, we don't trust West Virginia's judgment. Well, so to flip that on its head, then West Virginia has now said, in lay terms, hey, if you were good enough for your old state, you're good enough for ours. Like, welcome to the wild and wonderful. Here, let's help you get back to work. Let's earn that honest paycheck. Like, welcome.
Wait, is that the state's slogan, the wild and wonderful?
So when you cross the state line into West Virginia, there's always a welcome sign, and it's wild and wonderful West Virginia. Some years ago, I can't remember how many now, and if I start trying to do the math, it's going to hurt my feelings a little bit, that it was changed to something like open for business, which from a policy perspective, I love the aspiration that we're going to be a place that's going to be friendly to people who are trying to make their own way in this world and chase their version of the American dream. However, is just kind of a tagline and whatever for the state. No.
feels
like all our Tevin, West Virginia, you know, welcome to wild and wonderful West Virginia. But I, like I said, I like the policy aspiration of open for business, but from just a tagline standpoint, I'm very happy that we have reverted to wild and wonderful.
Yeah, I like that one too. But let's get back to, so I suspect that we're going to get in the nitty gritty of the arguments for and against this policy, but the arguments are important. They're vital, but it's not just having an argument. It's where to make it and how to make it, how to market this policy suggestion. So what have you done to argue for universal licensing recognition's adoption?
Well, so this ends up being a multi-year story, as I'm sure many of your guests who have also been here are telling. So if we kind of take this back to the very beginning, the first sort of research paper, some, you know, kind of more nerdy policy output that we had on occupational licensing from the Cardinal Institute was released in February of 2019. So 6 years ago, we partnered with our friends at the time, was the NIE Center for the Study of Occupational Regulation at St. Francis University out in Loretto, Pennsylvania. Today, they are the NIE Regulatory Research Center. They've expanded their body of regulatory research, and they're now housed at my alma mater, West Virginia University. But so we started with that, and it was just kind of highlighting, hey, how many professions are licensed in West Virginia? What are the various educational constraints or the requirements? And also, what are these initial licensing and renewal fees, as well as the continuing education requirements? And we compared those against Ohio and Pennsylvania. For a lot of reasons, basically just that is probably two of our biggest sort of competitor states, if you will, and highlighted this out to say, look, like West Virginia has heavier burdens to get licensed initially, whether across, I think, all of the margins, higher education requirements, higher fees, higher renewal fees. And if we're looking at this from sort of a basic economic statistics standpoint, West Virginians do not enjoy the same sort of economic quality of life on average as our neighbors in Ohio and our neighbors in Pennsylvania. We have lower incomes. We have, you know, lower workforce participation rates. And so it was just kind of highlighting the absurdity of this. We want more people in West Virginia to be working. We want them to be working good jobs that help them sustain their lifestyle and to be self-sufficient. And yet we are pulling off these bottom rungs of the ladder and hoping that you have like an NBA vertical leap to be able to just catch the first rung. And that doesn't make sense. So like I said, we started with the research, you know, had these conversations with the NIE Center in late 2018, first research in 2019. I'll kind of fast forward a little bit. We saw the first universal recognition bill introduced in the West Virginia legislature in 2020. And basically that bill, it got submitted, it got introduced, but really it was never heard in the committee. But hey, that's the first splash. You've got to have a bill introduced at all before anything like that is going to gather some momentum and for policy change to start to transfer into reality, you know, to make that transition from idea to reality.
Talk a little bit about what that, why that's a first step. How do you get a bill introduced?
So a lot of that you're going to come into, you know, we're thinking of our elected representatives as partners. So in West Virginia, we have a part-time citizen legislature. And on top of that, our legislature does not have like full-time office staff. So in some ways, we like to colloquially, it's a little much first thing in the morning, think of ourselves as kind of like the research arm for the legislature. Our job is literally to think about good ideas that will advance West Virginia. That's what we get paid to do. And the legislators are, they're juggling a bunch of competing demands, and they don't have the time to hang out in their offices and do the same sort of deep dive research that we're able to do. So we do that. We make it more digestible, if you will. You know, don't come in and burden them with like a 20-page white paper. Give them the nice one-pager, like let's have some high points that we really want you to remember and some key things to think about. And then kind of partner with them in crafting legislation. And in the same way, too, that I'm thinking about how Argert the Cardinal Institute, that we're part of this state policy network, part of this also international networks and the Atlas Network, that we have similarly situated organizations in other states that have done this already to say, hey, what did the legislation, what did the bill language look like that we are able to also come to our legislative partners and present them with, hey, here's the research, here's some bill language that's been vetted, you know, the tires have been kicked in other states, and we think this is a really great idea to move West Virginia forward and improve the lives of the, you know, 1.8 million people that live here. And then kind of as a bill gets introduced, as it, you know, moves through the process, it's being heard by the respective committees that are going to vet the merits of this bill, kick the tires a little further, if you will, to continue to be a resource to them as they're fielding questions from their legislative colleagues and what have you, to say, they're like, hey, I'm getting this question about, you know, what are the risks associated with just accepting licenses from other states? I've got colleagues who are sitting here and saying like, oh, well, how can we trust? So what have other states seen? We're able to leverage, you know, the research and the connections that we have with partners in other states to say, here's what other states are seeing. They have done this. And the evidence, you know, does or does not suggest that your colleagues' concerns are founded or not.
Mm-hmm. Who's standing in your way?
Well, so a lot of times, I guess the easiest way to do this is kind of a storytelling piece. When the Universal Recognition Bill was first introduced and really kind of first got some traction back in 2020, I think that, like I said, it really didn't get any traction in 2021. It did. And what you saw were a lot of what the professional organizations coming out. I think I particularly remember it was like the accountants, because, you know, CPAs were part of what would fall under the universal recognition umbrella. And
aren't certified public accountants because of their certification, not their licensing?
Well, it's kind of a double whammy. So there's just kind of for the profession at large, you get your CPA to like have all of your bona fides.
Yeah. And that's a national thing. Like it's, but there are state licenses on top of that. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. It's a layers issue. Yeah.
Indeed. And so I think it was like the accountants board, whichever group that really kind of represents the professional interests of accountants. They came out in force, and a lot of these licensed professions, the organizations that represent the interests of these professionals, came out in force. They were highly opposed to this. Oh no, we have these great standards in West Virginia, and we can't just go around willy-nilly trusting the judgment of these other states in the union, which also are responsible for doing the same thing to ensure that we have competent professionals that have been awarded licenses. So it really kind of turned into, it was a special interest story. Everybody kind of wanted to protect the turf that they had. And there is evidence in the economics research that, hey, by licensing professions, you've raised the barriers to entry. Fewer people are able to practice that trade. And then the people who are already licensed and quote unquote in the club, they enjoy higher wages and
less competition.
Right. So there is an economic kind of self-interest to say, no, this is really good for our people the way that things are. And, you know, to be charitable to these organizations, it is their job to represent the interests of their membership. Mm-hmm. And to come out against something like universal licensing, I follow the logic, but that is not good. And this, that is not an economic benefit to the entirety of West Virginia, that we are artificially reducing the number of professionals who are in the market to be able to provide these, you know, services to the state. And like I was talking about earlier at the beginning here, West Virginians are, on average, we are not enjoying particularly high incomes relative to our neighbors. We don't have the same kind of money to sit here and spend on whether it's an accountant, an electrician, a plumber. And that's going to introduce a whole host of other issues for people trying to kind of cut some corners here, whether it's on something that it's professional service or it's something like doing some home improvement projects.
So the opposition are people who have these licenses who are threatened by the idea of other people coming in plying their trade without going through the hoops they've gone through. And I assume their arguments then are about this is going to result in consumer harms or harms to people. How do you respond to that?
Well, for that, we really leaned again on the great research that has been provided by our friends at the Knee Center and kind of throughout the academic literature, that by and large, there is not evidence to suggest that higher licensing necessarily results in better safety for consumers, safer products, higher quality. Mm-hmm. A lot of the research is just sitting here saying, at the end of the day, you raise the barriers and increase the number of hoops that people have to jump through to be a licensed professional. All you do is raise how much it costs to hire one, and there's less available for the public to choose from.
Which is to say, okay, I understand that there is this theory that if we change these rules, consumers are going to be harmed. But let's look at the numbers. Doesn't seem like that's the case. Rest easy. We can accept more people working these professions from outside of the state.
For sure.
Seems like the battle's over then. You win, right?
Oh, if only it were that easy. If only. So in 2021, it was a full-scale covered kind of all of your more blue collar occupations, your plumbers, your electricians, like HVAC technicians, and also more of your kind of, I guess I'd call them white collar professionals, but all of these other licensed professionals, everything from like doctors down to barbers and cosmetologists. Clear through it. We got the momentum. This bill was passed by our House of Delegates in West Virginia, and I think it just kind of ran out of time in the West Virginia Senate. But also, let's remember, the world looked a little different in 2021. So it was a very weird legislative session because you couldn't go to the Capitol and kind of participate in the process in person in the same way as before. But also on the flip side of that, you also, the interest groups, the professional associations, they could not in the same way rally their membership to go to the Capitol and say, hey, this is bad for our professionals. We need a carve out, or we need for this legislation to not be passed. So I think in some ways that was kind of a turning point, because then it was a lot more of an argument on the scholarly merits, if you will, because you couldn't have more of this, I guess I would call it kind of the battle in the court of public opinion, and couldn't kind of rally people to come in and demonstrate in the same way. Well, like I said, that didn't really pass. But then the following year, in 2022, we did get a partial universal recognition bill passed. I think building off of that momentum in 21, where the argument was so much more kind of based on the merits, the evidence of it, and absent a lot of the, I guess, political showmanship, if you will. So this covered more of those blue-collar professions in West Virginia. So it was your plumbers, your HVAC technicians, your electricians. And that opened up, and I think what also helped there was you had construction companies and like the Association of Builders and Contractors saying, we're having a tough time getting the talent that we need here in West Virginia to complete the jobs that people want done. So it's like, yeah, you know, we've got some champagne problems here that people are wanting to do all sorts of work. But if we don't have the people to complete these tasks, everyone is losing out. Mm-hmm. So that got passed.
Which complicates the special interest thing, where it's like, look, there are political players in the system who want this. It's not just a bunch of nerds.
Exactly. It is really great when people who are not just like hanging out in our offices writing our cool white papers, that come in and say, no, this is going to make a real difference for our membership and for the people that we serve in the public. So we see that get passed in 2022, but this leaves out a huge chunk, because all of these professions are, they're governed by different parts of the West Virginia Constitution, West Virginia State Code. So a lot of these other kind of the white-collar professions, as I'm painting with a really broad brush here, they were not included in the reforms that were passed 3 years ago. So again, that's your doctors, your respiratory therapists, your veterinarians, your accountants, your engineers, a big long list of it. And I won't bore our listeners with that. But they were not included. So this year, when legislation was proposed, it just targeted that section of West Virginia Code, that collection of licensed professions that were not covered in universal recognition. And another thing that I think is really important to mention, it's what kind of leaderships and vision do you have coming from the executive branch? Mm-hmm. Because we had a gubernatorial election in November. So from 2016 to 2024, we had Governor and now Senator Jim Justice. And then in 2024, the people of West Virginia elected Patrick Morrissey, our former Attorney General, to take the helm in the governor's office. And on top of that, Governor Morrissey had stipulated that he had a vision. He has this bold vision for economic reforms. He's using the term, for your listeners who are unfamiliar with some sports lingo in West Virginia, we have what's known as the backyard brawl between West Virginia and the University of Pittsburgh and our sports teams. And it's pretty heated rivalry, but he's sort of appropriated that language and that mental model to say, hey, I want to have a backyard brawl with all of the states that we touch to enact the kind of policies that make West Virginia the optimal choice for you to forge your version of the American dream. So we had a governor who came in and is working with the legislature to say, hey, this is a really great idea. This is good for West Virginia. I want to see this passed. And I think that was helpful coming into this year in a way that we had not seen under the previous administration.
It seems like the magic in this policy reform is that space between we can get a bill introduced and it's going nowhere. And now we've got an enactable bill. What changed to make that happen?
So I think some of it was
I know, and that's subtle things. These are difficult things to tell. They require political judgment.
It is. So I think some of it, maybe there's possibly an argument to be made that, like, we flew a little too close to the sun, per se, in 2021, that we tried to do too much, change things up in a way that the state was not ready for, whether it was the general public and the legislature and the governor, that we were a little too bold. So then you see this sort of piecewise reform.
Let me stop, but there has to be something even between those two, between 2019, 2021, because it went from a go-nowhere bill to, no, we've got attention. They're working on this. We don't know if it's going to get passed, but there's interest. And that interest, I mean, apathy kills more bills than anything.
Yes.
So what happened?
Well, I would say, to without trying to throw my shoulder out here, pat myself on the back, but a sustained...
I allow this. It's okay. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that it should happen, but we're working on these things. We're arguing for them. We're trying to make the best case for it. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it resounds. Sometimes it, I mean, and maybe this is what happened. Maybe it's not. You tell me, which goes from, this is an idea that no one has ever heard of, no one ever cares about, versus, oh, I see this thing. It fits my agenda. People care about jobs. They care about state growth. This is something we can do about that. And then they might learn about the opposition later, but that's where it goes from being this thing that's on the side to something that has political benefits and that they see that people want.
There's that. And I think there's also the sustainment on our end, mm-hmm. that we continued to talk about this. We released the white paper 6 years ago. We talked about the benefits of, like, hey, this is holding people out. And to use a line from one of my professors in grad school, Pete Betke at George Mason University.
Florida scholars at the Mackinac Center wrote a paper for us in the early days.
Love Pete. I cannot say enough good things about him. And I know that he's quoting someone else on this, but it takes varied iterations to force alien concepts upon reluctant minds.
But so basically, you memorize that? That's a complicated observation.
I have it, like, on a sticky note on the wall. Mm. But it's...
Say that again.
It takes varied iterations to force alien concepts upon reluctant minds. Mm-hmm. Which, in less verbose terms, we tinkered with the message and delivered it to West Virginians in different ways. We started out, of course, with this foundational ring search and kind of heavy white paper. We did storytelling. We talked about how we made it real. We kind of personified it. We talked about people who moved into West Virginia and thought that this would be this great transition for their family. And instead, the breadwinner is having to jump through all of these hoops, is not able to provide for their family in the way that they were able to, and met these basically unnecessary hardships along the way. Last year, during the legislative session, we hosted sort of Facebook Live, hosted what we called Regulatory Reform Week and talked to a bunch of different scholars talking about a bunch of different regulatory issues, occupational licensing being one of them. But whether it was sort of long form written storytelling, having quick hitting, shareable pieces on social media to try and go viral, having little blurbs that we would record that just would talk about the key messaging, having these longer form conversations. So whichever way that that the audience might best receive that message to say, hey, this is a good idea. It's not going to cause this kind of harm. And ultimately, this is going to be good for everyone in West Virginia, just that sustained pressure on it without having to also kind of get mean about it, if you will.
Was this a partisan issue?
It started out that way. So I went back through this morning and I was reviewing kind of what the roll call votes looked like as the earlier iterations, you know, passed through the legislative process. So the big effort that we saw 4 years ago in West Virginia, basically it got passed out of the House of Delegates on party lines, the sort of skinny reform, as I'll call it, in 2022, again, passed along party lines, basically. You had like one or two kind of Republicans that voted against the bill. But then this year in 2025, kind of with that sustained pressure, with that leadership from the governor, with that just the messaging that has been repeated and tweaked and iterated on over the years, unanimous passage in both chambers. Now, granted, there has been change in the partisan makeup of our legislature over the last couple of elections. Roughly, we had about a 70-30 Republican-Democrat split in the House. 20-14, I think it was, or no, the numbers, but about like kind of a 2/3, 1/3 split, basically in both chambers, favoring Republicans along partisan lines in from kind of 2020 to 2024. Mm-hmm. After the 2022 elections, there's too many 20s in these years. This will get easier in another 5 years to talk about. Now in our House of Delegates, it's like 90-10. There's two Democrats in our 34-member Senate right now. So there is some of this that, like, the partisan makeup of West Virginia's electing has changed. But even still, total unanimity on passing both... on passing bills here in 2025.
This brings up a point that's worth observing, which is politics often seems like it is a contest between Republicans and Democrats. But often when it comes time to passing legislation on good policy, it's not about Republicans versus Democrats. It's about nerds versus special interests.
Yes. Yes, that really is. I think
concentrated benefits, diffuse costs. That's the way to put it.
Yeah. Although I think a lot of it really does just kind of, it's, you know, I think that nerds versus special interests kind of really captures it. And it's just it's an endurance competition. So I think a lot of the times we see, and it's not just for licensing, but you see it whether it's school choice fights across the country or some of these other issues, that I think your special interests, they're sprinters. They can come up, they can put on a great show, give you the razzle dazzle in this short burst and put together a really great performance that accomplishes their needs. And then you've got the nerds, if you will. We're marathon runners. We're ultra marathon runners. We are out here, the little engine that could keep chugging along, slow and steady wins the race, kind of a thing. And it turns into, if you can make this a long distance run, if you can make this an endurance match, then I think, number one, the evidence is on the side of the nerds. And the longer you are able to sustain the pressure on this issue, fight that apathy that you were talking about, the more likely the nerds are to make their good case and really bring forth good policy that is going to benefit the, you know, the citizens of all of your respective jurisdictions, whether it's local politics, whether it's state level politics, and even at the national level, if you can sustain that pressure long enough, and now I'm missing my quote, but if you can make it a long fight, the nerds will prevail.
Jesse, thank you for coming on. Congratulations for your victory. And thank you for sharing your story about how you shifted the Overton window.
Thank you for having me. And I'm looking forward to hopefully coming back in the coming years to tell some more great stories about how the Overton window is continuing to shift in West Virginia.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.